sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter. On Lightmap, we explore what it takes to make video games and interactive media, and we meet creative teams from all around the world. My name is Gianni. Thank you so much for joining me. My guests this week are co-director and lead game designer Adam Kwon-Yus and Klaas Eriksson, co-director and scriptwriter from Wishfully, who are launching in just, as we recorded this, not very long, a very soon time, a game called Planet of Lana, which is an epic cinematic sci-fi platformer about a kid just looking for her family. Adam and Klaas, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
We're excited to have you on the show. But before we dive in, let's find out what's been making the news this week on Walkthrough, which is Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 28th of April.
Embracer is dead. The company will split up into three parts as CEO eats crow after the capitalist implosion reaches a conclusion.
Escape from Tarkov players are up in arms as developers introduce a $250 pay-to-win mode.
Fortnite will let you block those sweaty emotes with strangers that were just a little bit too mean if you want to.
And Fallout 76 hits a massive player milestone after the launch of the TV series.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
Okay, so we're heading to Planet Novo for an adventure this week. Adam and Klaas, for people who've never come across the game before, what is Planet of Lana?
Planet of Lana is, as you said earlier, a cinematic puzzle platformer where you play as this young girl called Lana. And she's an 11-year-old girl living on this planet called Novo. And as you start the game, you're just thrown into this world through the eyes of this little girl. And she's living in this tranquil fishing village when this army of invading robots comes crashing down from the skies. And she's forced out into the wilderness, going out on a mission to try and find her big sister that's been taken away together with all the other people in her village, and basically forced out on this epic adventure through the planet. And very early on, she meets this cute little furry creature called Mui, and together they go out on this epic adventure together.
When you first play the game, it could be very easy for this to be a pretty dreadful and scary experience, but it doesn't really feel like that. It feels like you're heading off on a grand adventure. Can you tell me a little bit about how you wanted to frame this story for players as they are exploring, this big adventure that they're on?
Yeah, sure. That's actually a really good question, because that was something that we, I wouldn't say struggle with, but there was always something that came back in creative talks that, like, there's this kind of paradox almost between, like you say, like the what actually happens in the story, but then, like, you know, this sort of really colorful, homey, sort of Ghibli world. And yeah, I guess we just, like, the aim was to just try and find, like, you know, as much of a balance there as possible, because I think that was the mood that everyone initially fell in love with, even on the team as well. And like everyone who saw, you know, that first sort of key art that we use everywhere, that was the first image that Adam drew as a sort of concept sketch as well, is that, you know, there was so much mood in that picture that, you know, that we didn't want to lose during the development. But then at the same time, when we started asking questions about the story, like, you know, who are these robots? What are they doing here? Like, why is this scary thing, like, just staring at Lana, but it's still so beautiful? That I guess we wanted to sort of find a balance between both, you know, like, yeah. So that was a balancing act, like, throughout the production, I guess, you know.
No, definitely, I totally agree with you, and I think it's a very important thing about the game that feeling of being out in nature and like feeling the wind blowing through the trees and grass. And you can really, we wanted to create a world, even though it is a side-scrolling game, we wanted to really create that depth in the world and that kind of believability of that you're being there in these different environments. But as you say, it's really a mix, and you get to, in the game, you get to explore a lot of different environments, and both cozy nature sunshine environments and also scary like shipwrecks and dark caves and stuff like that. So it's really a mix.
I know your studio has a bit of a heritage in doing this, some of the work that you've done in the past, but for me, it really felt like I was walking through matte paintings, through storyboards almost as I was going through that. It felt like the shots were set up and we were kind of just walking into shot every time. Can you tell me a little bit about designing that sort of visual language, and was that an intentional design as part of the game?
I mean, since both me and Klaus are coming from, this is the first game we're making, and we're coming from a film and animation background before, and I've been working as an illustrator and animator before this, and I think that we have a lot of visual, like working in a visual way before this, and I think that's something that translated very well into this kind of game. And I think, I mean, one big positive thing about doing a side scroller is that you have the camera from the side, right? So you can really frame this like epic images really that still are playable and interactable. So yeah, it's definitely like all these like kind of key images. Most of them are like concept arted first and then taken into the game. But a lot of them are also like organically grown through our level designer, Rickard, when he's like putting all the assets out and like we're really modulating out the game. But one thing that I think is very interesting is that like, the concept, like the game actually looks better in game than the concept art. So I think we really succeeded with that, like taking the concept art and then creating this like depth and keeping the hand painted feel, but still, I'm very happy about that.
How did you, you said this is the first game you've ever worked on. I know you have a sort of partner agency that you've done sort of creative works for other things, sort of within the game space and other animation as well. But why did you want to make a game?
I guess for me personally, it's my biggest interest, and it's always been since I was a kid. And the thing I know the most about, I kind of fell into animation and film, but I really wanted to make games all along. But you know, you drift into one professional space, and then you have your dreams of like making the leap into a whole other industry. And it took a long time before like getting the enough experience of other things and encouraged to make the leap into the games industry. So that's basically it, and I'm very happy that we did it. And it feels very unreal being one day away from now releasing the game.
Yeah, I just fell into it, you know, completely, Gianni. I had no ambitions whatsoever to do any video games. It was just Adam asked me, do you want to write this thing? And I was like, hell yeah, because I hadn't even thought about it, to be honest. I'd never, like, you know, I hadn't considered it as an option. So when Adam asked me, I was like, I thought about it for about 2 seconds, and I was like, yeah, that sounds like a really fun time.
And we can also add that me and Klaus has been working together since we were 13 years old in different projects, we've been running a film production company together and have had a lot of projects over the years before this as well. So that makes it easier also, since I'm in Sweden and Klaus is in Sydney, when you're co-directing a game, that you know each other very well.
You must have a good working relationship if you can maintain that for so many years.
It worked. We actually, the first time we saw each other in person during the whole production, which I guess technically started in 2018, was last year when we went to Gamescom.
I mean, that seems to be the future of how game development tends to work these days, as more and more studios are building games entirely remotely. But I'm wondering, can you tell me, you know, this is the first game you've worked on, you have got that experience of making things in the past, but what were some of the things you really had to learn coming in, which just was completely different to your production process in the past?
I mean, honestly, I think there was there's been so many like hurdles and things that have been difficult. And I think the best thing that was that we were quite naive going into it, you know, that we didn't know the industry, like working in the industry that well. Because if we did, if we would have known that, I don't know if we would have done it, because it's been very like it's been a tough journey. But yeah, it's just so many things, everything from, you know, pitching your game and, you know, game design, like working with story in a game. It's just so many things that's so challenging. But that's also the fun thing about it. I think both me and Klaus really thrive also in that space where we challenge ourselves creatively.
I mean, definitely the storytelling aspects are like so interesting, because obviously there's the whole interactivity thing, which, you know, adds a whole other dimension to even though we've actually made like quite a linear game, it's like, you know, there's still, you have to take into account that there's individuals going to be playing this game and they're going to want to play it, you know, as they want. And from a storytelling perspective, it's that, you know, like, again, a whole other dimension. It's like, how do you work gameplay into the storytelling? Like, you know, you can sit down, you write a script, and it all plays like a movie in your head, but, you know, then it's got to gel with, like, you know, the character arc has to gel with the difficulty of the puzzles and, you know, the cutscene, you can't have too many cutscenes, but you still have to tell the story that you want to tell. And, like, you know, it's a balancing act. But that's also why it's so much fun, you know, like, and especially like being gamers or like, you know, like just loving sort of narrative driven games ourselves. It's like, you know, you have a lot of good reference to go on, and hopefully we got close to hitting the mark.
You feel so humbled by the whole experience when you look at other games and you realize how much hard work it is to make a game. I think that's also one of the big takeaways, and we've learned so much during this process, and we're so eager in the team. The best thing I think is like that we've put together this awesome team in the studio, and that this is our first game. This is just the beginning for us. Like, we're so excited to get going on the next game, and yeah, that's so exciting, taking everything we've learned from this first game and keep working together.
5 years is a long time to be working on a project in a field that you are relatively new to. Can you tell me what was the motivation to keep going as you were getting close to the end? Because we've had a, you know, global pandemic in the middle of that too as well. So how did it keep your team motivated and get to the finish line?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really long project. I think, personally, I just decided that I was going to finish this project. It started really small. It was just me and my ex-wife from the beginning, and then very, very quickly, like during just a few months, we formed the whole like base for the studio, and then we worked for over two years like without salaries, just working other jobs on the side, pitching our game, building like a demo that we could pitch the game with. Yeah, I don't know. It's just I think what motivated us through it all is all the love we got for the game, because people, we knew that we had something that affected people, like just from the concept art, that people wanted to play this. And I think that was the main motivation, that like when it was tough, that we felt that we have something here. We just need to figure out how to actually make a good game out of it, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I think so much of the motivation, at least for me, was built into the vision that Adam came in with already. And like that grew a lot. Like everyone brought their own thing into it, you know, over the years. But so much of like just that original vision of that original image that's behind Adam now, you know, and that thing is like, to me, like, it was almost like it was contagious, you know what I mean? It's like everyone who came in contact with it and everyone that we brought on board got it. And so like when everyone gets it and you know everyone's on the same page, pulling in the same direction, you know what you want the final thing to be, like people are just going to keep going until you get there. You know what I mean? Like you're just going to keep going until you feel like it's in that state that you see it. So I agree with everything Adam said, but I think that was also, you know, coming more from the outside in, that was a huge part for everyone.
Yeah. And I think like that original vision that I had, I mean, the game is so much better than that now, because everyone in the team has just, it's just this magical thing when you're doing something that you really love to do and other people just come in and they also want to do that, you know, and it's just this snowball effect of it getting better. So that's been a really amazing journey to have been a part of, just seeing all the like creativity and how it's just gotten better and better over the years.
You mentioned there that everyone who came to the team brought a little bit of themselves to this project. Can you tell me what were some of the elements that, you know, built out this experience, this gameplay as you were going through? You know, comparisons have been made to the Playdead, Inside and Limbo, for example, and also Studio Ghibli. But can you tell me a little bit about, you know, those contributions that have made the Planet of Lana?
I mean, for example, like just, you know, puzzle design. I mean, it's so hard making good puzzles and finding that, and also deciding like how hard your we want our puzzles. We decided early on that we wanted a tad more accessible puzzles than, for example, Inside, which is a big inspiration for us. But of course, like still making, you know, you want the puzzles to be fun and you want to feel smart. If they're too easy, you're just going to get bored. Are they too hard? Then you're going to get frustrated. And people are in such a different level also of in their ability to solve logical puzzles. Like this is just how it is. Like people are different in that sense. So finding the right balance for that was one of the huge challenges we had, because we know we had like a beautiful game. But we didn't just want to make a beautiful game. We want to make a good game, a fun game that's had good pacing and good variation and all that. And it was really a few years into the project, because also one of our childhood friends, Don Faxe, who we also worked together since we were 13, he was working as a technical animator on the project. But then a few years into the project, we realized that he really had like talent for puzzle design. So then he started making the puzzles, and that was basically when it changed to the better in a huge way, where it all like kind of clicked. So that was a huge contribution, for example. But we have so many. I mean, we have our lead animator, Olle Engström, who's really brought the characters to life and all that. And then we had a programmer that actually is one of the co-founders of Tarsier Studios that worked on the game for a year and before moving on to other things. But he really also laid the whole technical, built like the whole like wind system that we have like in the trees and in the grass. And I mean, if we wouldn't have had that, the world would have been so much more dead. It would have been pretty like it is in the screenshots, but it's really like the wind that brings the nature to life, for example. And then, I mean, I could go on and list so many people. It's everything, everyone has been so important in making the experience, I would say.
I want to touch on that approachability. The game looks beautiful, and I'm wondering if there's been a bit of a challenge when people finally get their hands to play on, you know, some of the experiences you've had at Gamescom and things like that. People looking at it being a very pretty game and then running up against some of the difficulty of these puzzles. Is that something you've experienced, and what have you done to make an approachable game for a variety of different skill sets?
I mean, we tested the game so much and just iterated it so much. And it was a very, very good, like, it was tough making that demo for Gamescom in the middle of production and making that like in that like delivery quality or launch quality kind of in that part of the game. But it was a very useful thing to do that we were forced to do that, because then we really needed to make kind of like the tutorial part of the game, or where you learn how to play together with your companion Mui, and how to solve puzzles with her. So we really needed to make that a strong like demo experience, and that was so good for the full game as well. And that demo is actually a version of the game that we've remade so many times, because it's basically the same like vertical slice or demo that we made to pitch the game originally. So the first version of that was out like in 2020, and then like each year we had a new version of this for different reasons of that, like as we iterated on the game design and the puzzle design. So we just had so many years and iterations on the puzzle design and the game design to really make it like a good like learning curve throughout the game. And yeah, it's been really challenging, but I think I'm very happy where the game is right now. Then of course, like we've still seen like in testing that for some people they find it easier and some people find it harder. It's just that kind of a beast it is to make logical puzzle games. It's not like when you have platform, like a challenging game that's like mechanically challenging, like platforming or like a shooter or something like that. It's a different kind of difficulty, right? So it's been really interesting and challenging.
Klaus, I'm wondering if you could tell me about writing the story of this game. It is effectively wordless. There is still dialogue in the game, but most of it has to be conveyed by what's happening environmentally and with the characters in there. Tell me about how you tell that story in a way that's understandable for players all around the world.
Well, hopefully understandable. I guess it remains to be seen. You know, we'll see we'll see what the verdict is. No, but yeah, for sure. And that has been again a balancing act. So from the beginning, we didn't actually intend to even come up with the language that we did, like the sort of made up language. So for people who aren't aware, we've written our own language, and that's sort of the characters speak that to each other. But there's no subtitles, so you just sort of have to infer meaning from context and, like you said, like from background and stuff like that. So from the beginning, we weren't even going to do that. But I think it didn't like sort of take long before we realized that, like, no, we are going to need something to convey a bit more like emotion than just sort of noises and grunts and body language. And it was always an exercise in like we wanted to keep it as simple as possible, as like, you know, like quite minimalistic, like the storytelling. Like we wanted it to feel like a big epic adventure, but we didn't want like long convoluted like dialogue scenes. And like, I mean, I've always had an issue with like my biggest issue with story in video games in general, and I think for other people as well, is that it's that old adage of like show don't tell. It's like somehow it seems like video games do the complete opposite a lot of the time. And I don't know, maybe we went too far the other side. I have no idea, but like that was the experiment, and I'm really happy with the result. That it's like it's a complex story told in a simple way, I think, and that is what we wanted to achieve. And I wanted to just reconnect before, because music is actually quite a big part of the. Of the storytelling as well. And that was that, like, so these I guess the concept of like sort of good and bad or good and evil is conceptualized with this weird sort of twisted corrupted melody that the robots use to communicate with each other on this world. And then without spoiling too much, there's like this sort of opposite of that, which is like this really beautiful, like sort of melodic harmony that Takeshi Furukawa wrote, and that sort of comes back in like the soundtrack, and that's also like, you know, that's also a way of like, that's a dialogue in a way, you know, it's communication, but not on a level where it's like a big dramatic like Shakespearean, you know, dialogue scene, you know.
Adam and Klaus, can you tell me, you know, you've got these two characters that are, you know, exploring this world together. Can you tell me a bit about how that relationship develops over the course of the game?
Yeah, I mean, so what we've been trying to do is really, you know, throughout as you play the game, that you really feel the bond between you and this cute little creature, Mui, strengthened throughout the adventure. At the beginning, Mui is a really strong ally, and she can do things that you can't. She can jump higher, she can bite off ropes, and she can jump into small spaces that you can't. So she's a really valuable ally to you. And then on the other hand, you come to parts of the game where you have to help Mui as well. And I think through that kind of gameplay and the gameplay progression and what Lana and Mui can do together and separate, both it's fun gameplay wise, exploring what they can do and how they interact with the world in different ways. But also that it's interwoven into how their bond is getting stronger and stronger, and how players feel about Lana and Mui. And that's really something that we wanted to achieve in the game.
Klaus, can you expand on that relationship a little bit? What were some of the touchstones that you were trying to touch on as you were getting that story told?
Sure. Well, I could start with a challenge that became apparent. Our excellent voice actress who portrays Lana, Bianca. We did a recording with her where we recorded a whole bunch of different VO states, because it's it goes back to this sort of the foundational mood of just Ghibli coziness and all that, something that we really wanted to capture. But then the reality of the story is that all these quite bad things happen, tension increases, sometimes there's stealth. So we basically just recorded a whole bunch of versions in different tones of all the gameplay communication that Lana and Mui have. And one of the big challenges, directorially, was definitely to sort of implement those different VO states throughout the game, so it never felt like jarring. If Lana's just sort of something really devastating has happened, she thinks she's seen her sister or something, but then she hasn't, she can't just turn around 0.5 seconds later and just be really happy with Mui, so that was definitely a big challenge. But narratively, I think the gameplay just came together so well that relationship growing, it pretty much it's what Adam said, the mechanics did such a good job of building that relationship that more additional narrative work there wasn't really that much, other than getting the cutscenes really nice and tight.
I will come back to the music, because I'm really interested to ask a little bit more about that. But I'm just curious on the language that you've developed for this game. It's something that is, has rules and it can be understood. Why did you make it a real language rather than it just being something like Simlish, for example, which is just, language sounding sounds?
Well, I think that's a nice part of it too, because if you actually pay attention, you can actually learn enough of the language to sort of understand quite a bit. So you can learn through just the communication that Lana has with Mui, the companion creature. This is just a few words, but you can actually, I intentionally reuse those phrases throughout cutscenes and stuff like that to actually give the players a chance to understand. And once we decided to go with that, I just thought that to actually have a language, a spoken language, I just started nerding out. I was just this is too much fun. I'm going to write a language. And it's it's not Tolkien level. But there's a story element to that as well, that I wanted to keep it simple, as part of the lore and again, without spoiling too much, but the origins of the actual language. But I just fell in love with the idea of getting to do it, and then we ran with it because it was just too much fun.
Yes, just adding to that, I just want to say that I feel with all this, the language that you created, Klaus, and the story that's been written, and how we tell the story, which what I think is a thing that I'm very happy about with the game, that it is a fun game. Like, the puzzles are fun, and different people are going to get different takeaways from Planet of Lana. So some people are just going to, you know, run through the game as fast as they can, like see it as a challenge to solve the puzzles, and then they're done, and they don't maybe take away as much from the backstory and such as like a person that's very, very interested in lore and like backstory and everything like that. They can like stay in different environments and, you know, explore them, and that's something that that was a very deliberate thing, in that I'm very happy about that we have such a rich backstory and secrets for people to kind of theorize themselves about, because we're not like writing it out all in like in paper exactly how everything is tied together, but you can make your own kind of theories surrounding the backstory and the story. And I think that's a lot of fun because it adds that layer and depth to the game that I'm very happy about.
I know there's a lot of nerdy people on the Conlang subreddit who are going to be very excited to decipher all of this as it comes together. We were talking a little bit about the music, and yeah, you were lucky enough to work with Takeshi Furukawa, who has done, people would know from The Last Guardian, also the Clone Wars TV series. How did that come about, and what was the process like working with a composer to that? Did you just say, go nuts, or was it a very collaborative back and forth sort of process?
So it really started like back when we just worked on the game for a couple of months, and we were pitching the game in our first like game conference here in Sweden, a neighboring town here. But there was a lot like international publishers there and journalists, and there was one journalist from the Daily Mirror who really liked the game. We didn't have a demo or anything like that. We just had some concept art and, you know, a verbal pitch. But he really was liked how it looked, and he wrote an article in the Daily Mirror. And Takeshi has told me afterwards, he was just scrolling, you know, internet, and then he saw this article and like this image, this concept art that we have, really made him intrigued. And he sent an email to me, and, you know, said, this looks stunning, and do you happen to have a composer for the game? And, you know, the weird thing was that I was pitching the game during that conference as, you know, Inside plus The Last Guardian in a Studio Ghibli universe. So having him contact us was, you know, I thought it was a hoax for sure. And it took like several emails back and forth before I believed that it was actually him who contacted us. But yeah, but that was it. And then we talked for 1 or 2 years or something like that, and then before he came on board, and then it's been Klaus that's been working closely with him.
Yeah, for sure. Oh man, it's first of all, he's awesome. He's just so nice to work with, and like I think musically, originally we were really keen, both me and Adam, on like, because we had this sort of minimalist mindset in general, we were very like, we had our hearts set on like a very, quite a minimalist, sort of Ghibli-esque, like almost expressionist, like kind of soundtrack as well. But like, you know, the more the story grew, the more the whole thing grew, like, you know, Takeshi was pretty adamant that like, now we should go like full on like Spielberg, you know? You know, I'm super glad that he did, because yeah, I honestly, like, you know, it's pretty hard to claim objectivity, but I think it's one of the best video game soundtracks that's ever been made, actually. Like, personally, it's a big call, and I like them, but it's like, yeah, I love the score so much.
Did you send off levels? Did you send off scripts to Takeshi, and then it went from there, or did he just kind of play around and you threw a few things and see if it felt right or not?
Well, right at the beginning of the thing, like, I wrote up this sort of massive brief, because there was this, like I touched on it before, there was this very musical element in the story and by extension the gameplay as well. So, and I had a very clear idea that I wanted that the sort of diegetic and the non-diegetic to be able to mix there, like with this melody that I was talking about before, that is sort of like it reappears throughout the game, both within the game, as in within the world, and then it returns. I think the conversation very much started there, where we said, like, you know, this is the sort of properties that we're looking for. It needs to be quite simple and needs to sort of feel a bit like this. And that was one of the first, very first things that he sent over. It was like, what about something like this, you know? And I was like, yes, yes, something like that. And then it just sort of went from there, you know? And yeah, it's like, I'm really excited for, obviously, for people to hear the hear and see and play the final result themselves. But
yeah, and I was so lucky as well to fly down to Budapest, and I was there filming some behind the scenes when Takeshi recorded the soundtrack with the orchestra there in Budapest. It was a full orchestra of 90 people playing the music of our game. It was an unreal experience that I'm so happy that I've been a part of as well. And
did it feel real for you when you were seeing all those musicians in front of you playing it and actually feeling the sound in the room?
It felt like they were doing it for something else, not our game. But you know, it was so cool just seeing, you know, the note sheets and seeing like Planet of Lana and then like the titles under. Then it felt real. And, you know, just wandering the corridors, like when you've been out or something and you come back in and you can just hear it, like this epic score in the background in that concert hall. It was really special.
Takeshi did very much like, beyond that sort of initial brief with that melody, it was very much like Takeshi going, like, you know, sending stuff and like, just how about this? How about this? And it was just like, yeah, maybe tweak it a little bit here and there. But then it's like, yeah.
You're less than 48 hours away from the launch of this game as we are talking. Can you tell me, how does it feel to be at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's very giddy, or like I'm very nervous. And yeah, it's like this mix of a lot of emotions. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. It's going to be weird and fun all in the same way. It's very surreal, like when you've been thinking about the launch of this game for so long, and it were so many years. When I was talking about the game, promising that we're going to make the game, both to like people jumping onto the project and others, and now it's finally time. I'm so proud of the whole team that we've made it, and that I'm so proud of the game. So it's going to be a lot of fun getting it out into the hands of the players and seeing people's reactions. And yeah, that was a very fun experience also when we showed the game at Gamescom and people got to play it for the first time. You know, just watching streams, watching people play it and getting their honest reactions, kind of. That's the best part, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Excited, nervous, all of the above. Mostly excited, definitely.
The game is Planet of Lana. Adam Klass, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the launch, just a few hours away now. It will be out on Xbox and PC. By the time you listen to this, you'll be able to find it on all the stores there. Thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat and invite us into this epic sci-fi world of yours.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
Sifter is produced by Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and my name is Gianni DiGiovanni, and I'm the executive producer. Thanks to Omni Studio for their support of Sifter's podcasts, and you can find links to everything we've talked about, including a video version on our website, which is sifter.com.au, where you can see some of the beautiful gameplay of this game and experience it before you get a chance to play it. And while you're online, why not join the Sifter community, where you can share your creativity with others in our very chill server. That's on Discord. So go to sifter.com.au/Discord to get there. That's sifter.com.au/Discord. That's all for now. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, have fun.
Hi, Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Unicorn Overlord might have a strange name, but don't dismiss its tactical prowess.
It uses a tactics mode, and which is similar to the Gambit system that was in Final Fantasy XII for your squad mates. And you can say, okay, well, you know, Hodrick, who's my legionnaire with the big shield, I want him to prioritize protecting the back row. They're going to take the most damage. If they take a physical hit, they're going to go down, but I need them to be protected. So you can get quite granular with this, and I reckon you can build some pretty wild builds that are totally game-breaking, but it's kind of the fun of the tactical squad-based gameplay in Unicorn Overlord.
Tune in to Drop Rate to find out why Unicorn Overlord might just be one of 2024's sleeper hits. Available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.